you let them creep into a space in your heart that I don't think we really allow human beings to go into, because they love you unconditionally. They are with you every single day. You know, some of them sleep in your bed. I don't know how you get more connected than that.
I'm Phil Hatterman, and you're listening to Dog Words, presented by Rosie Fund. Today on Dog Words, CEO, dog mom, and author of Pets Are Family, Erica Sinner, talks about love, loss, and her advocacy for including pet bereavement in corporate policies. You can pre-order her wonderful book and take advantage of amazing resources at petsarefamily.info. If you're new to Dog Words, in each episode we explore the world of dog care and companionship. We save each other is the motto of Rosie Fund, which simply means the more we do for dogs, the more they do for us, and they already do a lot. A reminder that it's not too late to support Rosie Fund and also get great photographs of your dog with the Pooch Playoffs. If you are in the greater Kansas City and Lawrence area, use the link in the description to access the registration form, and photographer Claire Shelley will contact you to arrange your photo shoot. You can also learn more by listening to our interview with Claire, linked in the description. We are still raising funds to help cover the medical expenses of Philip, a Rosie Fund dog who had to have a leg amputated when his cancer returned shortly after being adopted. Go to Rosie Fund's Facebook page to contribute to the campaign, or go to rosiefund.org/donate to use PayPal, Venmo, or your credit card. Please put Philip in the note if you donate through our website. We welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions, especially if you have an idea for a topic or a guest. Go to the podcast page at rosiefund.org to share your thoughts. The mission of Rosie Fund is to provide humans with the resources and education they need to give senior and harder-to-adopt dogs a better life. We thank you for joining our mission. Joining us from St. Louis on Dog Words today is author Erica Sinner. Erica, welcome to Dog Words.
Thank you so much. I am so happy to be here. I've been looking forward to getting to meet you. This is awesome.
And thank you so much for checking out our podcasts ahead of time. You told me that you've already subscribed, you're listening to them, and I encourage other listeners, especially if this is the first episode you've listened to, we have a wide variety of topics and guests, and especially if you like authors, we have authors on here all the time, so there's lots of authors to listen to. And one of the reasons I like talking to authors is, one, I'm an author, but I also just really enjoy hearing, how did you go through the process of deciding to write a book? How did you go from, I'm feeling this, to I need to share this? Because a lot of people think, I should write a book, but most people stop there. So tell us your story. What was your inspiration for Pets Are Family?
I truthfully did not ever think I would be an author. I didn't think I'd ever have a book. My experience this summer in losing Kingston in May, and 2 weeks later, Edmund was diagnosed with cancer, and we were on the journey of radiation and surgeries and spent a lot of time at the University of Illinois with him through his cancer treatment. It made me really grateful, one, that I had the privilege of owning my own company, so I was able to take time off work to grieve Kingston, but also to be there for Edmund's cancer treatment. And we've always had pet bereavement leave in our work policies, so I feel really lucky about that. But during that time, I still felt a lot of shame around, you know, would my team think I'm being strong, or do people understand? Will they think it's just a dog? Like, it shouldn't hurt this much. And here I am truly grieving in a really powerful way, a profound way, that I felt a responsibility. I think it's hard to talk about grief as in humans and, you know, our own family and friends in general. And I think it becomes even more gray when you think about talking about grief when you lose a pet. And I truly believe you can't normalize something unless you talk about it. So I decided I needed to get it out and be vulnerable and share my story, and then also really advocate for pet bereavement to be added to organizational policies.
A lot to unpack there. Intellectually, when your pet is diagnosed with cancer or anything life-threatening, or even if it's just an elderly pet and you're going through end-of-life decisions, intellectually, you know, I'm not the only person who's gone through this. Thousands of people around the world go through this every day. But emotionally, there's a part of you that feels, I'm the only one who's ever had to deal with it this way.
Yes.
And so how do you reconcile that? How can I possibly be the only one to have this depth of feeling, this grief, this confusion, this guilt, guilt over, could I have done more? Could I have given them a better life? Could I have given them a longer life? Should I have given them a longer life? And also the guilt of, I'm losing a pet. Parents have lost a child. Someone's lost a spouse. Someone's lost a loved one. I'm grieving over a pet and somehow not accepting that what you're feeling is just as important. So now I've given you a lot to unpack. Yes. So what was the process of going through sort of that reconciliation between intellectually, I'm a business owner, I have responsibilities, and this is something everyone goes through, and emotionally that this is just a punch in the gut?
Yeah, as you talk about it, I clearly, right, with Vinny and with Peaches, you've gone down the road too. And it is anytime I've ever talked to anyone else about losing their pet, it's the same feelings that are felt across, even though you do feel for yourself, this is the hardest thing I've ever been through. Mm-hmm. Nobody could possibly understand. It's so interesting to feel that level of grief and that level of pain. And at the same time, feel like, but people lose their family. A parent has lost a child. How can it be that this pain is so great? I think for myself, it was hard to balance the two. And I try to push it down to say, I'm going to allow myself to cry at night, or I'm going to allow myself before I go to work, or I'm just going to keep powering through. I'm going to work out harder. I'm going to dive into work. And that worked for me for probably a good 11 days. And then my body was just like, absolutely not. Like I was having external stress was showing. And I think that's what forced me to sit down and really acknowledge to myself and validate and say, and honor my feelings that this is really hard. I did a lot of reading and I was online trying to figure out, you know, are there others like me? Are there articles to read? How do I think about this grief in comparison to others? And also how do I get past it? There was a lot of things of like, here's the things you could do, take a walk or create a memorial. And what for me really I needed was I needed to read somebody else saying, it is this hard and it is hard to sleep and it is hard to eat and it is hard to get out of bed. And my house feels like a torture chamber. You're walking around it at any moment. You might see the couch that they used to sit on, or you might remember the morning they used to come in and wake you up. All the time, hundreds of reminders in your own home is really hard. I also really thought about, I recognize people lose their loved ones every day, whether it be your sister or your mom or your child or a family member. But I still think the relationship that we have with our animals is really different than the relationship we have with human beings. I think animals, you let them creep into a space in your heart that I don't think we really allow human beings to go into, because they love you unconditionally. They are with you every single day. You know, some of them sleep in your bed. I don't know how you get more connected than that. You see them every single day. So of course it is going to hurt this much when there's such a hole missing when they leave us.
And the responsibility you have for them is more than what most parents even have for their children, because ideally your children get to the point where they don't need you as much as they used to. Your pet, certainly a dog, never gets to that point. They right. always need you. You're not raising yeah. them to be independent.
Yeah.
You do that with a child, you've done your job. That's what you're supposed to do, is give them that gift of independence, not with a dog.
It's true. And I also think, you know, with a child or with a family member or with a friend, if you are diagnosed with cancer, or if you're going in for a surgery, or if you're having to go to the doctor's appointment, you can help tell them, I'm here with you. It's going to be okay. We're going to do this together. Not that it's going to be an easy road by any means, but at least you're able to talk to them and they're talking back to you, where I think your pet, it's you're connecting when you look in each other's eyes, but they don't fully grasp what's happening. Mm-hmm. I know with Edmund, you know, with all of his surgeries and the radiation, he was so excited when he saw us after. And I always felt so much guilt of, I hope he doesn't think I'm leaving him here. I hope he really knows I'm coming back. Like mm-hmm. we're going to be right back. that was really hard.
Yes, they're walking out of the room with an oncologist, and it's like they have no idea what's coming.
Yeah, and sometimes you're tricking them. Like, they don't want to go.
You're like, oh, this is your friend. Yeah.
Yeah, this is your friend. Yeah, yeah.
And that person really is trying to do what's best for them.
Yes.
But they're also going to be poking them and sticking them.
Yeah.
Well, you decided to write a book to share your experience, to be sort of a beacon for others to see that here's where the rocky shoreline is and you're not alone. But you also created a website as a resource, as a supplement to the book. Tell us about petsourfamily.info, which was linked in the description of this episode.
I thought it was important. If you get to know me, I'm a person of action. I'm always like, we've got to be able to do something. And so when I started to write the book and really focus on, I wanted anyone who was going through this experience to feel like all of this is normal. The pain that you feel is normal. And also if you've been through this experience, that everything you experienced before, and even though it's years later and you still cry for the pets that you have lost, that that also is normal, because it's a real bond. It's a real relationship. It's real love that you have experienced with another soul. But the other part of the book too, which I try to balance out in my writing, and I wrote the book in sections so that you could really take from it whatever you needed from the book. I wanted other people who didn't understand what you were going through to have a window in to what was happening, so that if they don't have a cat or a dog, and you have a family member who's going through losing a pet, that you can at least show up for them in a way that is supportive, in a way that makes them feel loved, and for yourself to at least feel like you have a roadmap. I think it's hard when you go through grief, you don't know what to say, but at least in humans, we have funerals and we have donations, and
there's lots of rituals that have evolved over the course of civilization for a reason.
Yes. But for pets, it's hard. I even with my own team, they weren't sure if they should send me a text message or if they should send flowers or how they should be talking to me or even reintroducing me back into work in meetings. And that's where the idea really came for me around these resources and the website and the book. I've included all of the resources in the very back section, but I broke them out into one, if it's for grieving pet parents, it's statistics. So beyond my own story, it's actual research I went and found that states why this is so hard. And it's referenced out to other, you know, clinicians, psychologists, to really say like all of this is really valid. And then I also have a section around workplace resources that help you go back and advocate to your own organization why it's important to have pet bereavement leave in your policies. There's talking points, there's FAQs for your HR department. There's even talking points for them, because HR will then have to go convince the executive team why we should be doing this. And even guardrails around, you know, well, how many days are we doing? Even one single day written in a policy, I think signals to an employee that this matters. You need a moment to breathe and you need time, right? Not use your PTO time, not hope that your manager understands that this is really hard, but that it is in the policy that this is a traumatic moment and you have every right to be grieving.
Because whoever you report to needs to know, or it's helpful for them to know, why you are taking this time off. Because if you're just using PTO, it could be, you know, a friend's coming from out of town unexpectedly, or any number of things that have nothing to do with grieving.
That's right.
But for them to know how to treat you while you're gone and when you come back.
Yeah. And that when you come back, you didn't just take a day off to get refreshed and now you're back and let's go. You know, grieving doesn't have a timeline, and you're probably not going to be your bubbly self. You know, you might need more time, even in the work that you're working on. Your brain is cloudy even from the grief. So I had that as part of workplace resources too, around team training and team management and, you know, things to say and things not to say. I think there are people who have never had a pet, or they don't have. I think Forbes reported 70% of households have animals, but there still are 30% that don't. And so I think there are a lot of situations where an employee will tell their manager, you know, my dog died, I need time, I'm grieving. And then somebody would say, it's just a dog. Mm-hmm. They don't get it yet. And so I thought that was really important for me to be vulnerable enough to share that, but also make it okay and give others the resources and the words to be able to have those conversations at work, to give themselves some of that time.
And like we were talking about earlier, the balance or reconciliation between the intellectual and the emotional, you may have a boss who's lost a pet, but also thinks, okay, as a boss, while I grieved my pet, I felt terrible, I just need to tell this person to suck it up. Like, I was supposed to suck it up. It was hard for me. It's going to be hard for them, but hey, that's what happens. Right. But this gives them permission to recognize that what you went through is what this person is going through. There wasn't anything wrong with you. What you felt was okay. And it's fine to then allow your employees to grieve instead of thinking, I would be a bad boss to the rest of the employees if I allowed this person to grieve their pet.
Exactly. Yes. And to say to them too, around like, gosh, that was really hard. And you should have had the opportunity to have some time to grieve. So now you get to pay that forward and gift that to your team, recognizing that you're more than just your job title, but pets are more than just some additional part of your life. They are part of your family. It is hard when you lose them.
A few years ago, we had author Mark Cushing on to discuss his book, Pet Nation, The Love Affair That Changed America, that talks about the economic, media, legal, political, and social transformation that's taken place in really just a couple generations.
Yeah.
Where pets have gone from being, we have one, but now we're going to go on vacation, to we have one, what hotels are pet friendly?
Yes.
Instead of telling a neighbor or a relative, come feed our dog while we're gone. And just the fact that, like you said, the dog sleeps with you, which would have been unheard of a couple generations ago. You're a crackpot.
Yes. Now I can't imagine.
It's sleeping in your bedroom, let alone in your bed.
Yes. Yeah. And I also think generations now, I mean, my husband and I are perfect. We chose not to have children by choice. We just knew human kids were not for us. We wanted to have dogs. This is the life we were wanting to have. And I think that is becoming also more normalized. And so as you think about families who are creating their families with dogs versus people, it is their whole world. That in it is their, it's almost like it's their child. These are their kids. And the level of care, I think if you don't have a pet, you don't really appreciate, there still are doctor's appointments. You're still feeding them. You're responsible for their overall health and their well-being. You know, now there's pet insurance. Yeah, I think you're right. I think every year, every generation, I think they're just becoming more and more important. And I think it's good to then recognize, right, that they really are part of your family. And of course, it's going to hurt when you lose them.
Considering pet bereavement as a kind thing to do, okay, be kind to your employees. But it also just makes fiscal sense. I'm going to have a better workforce if I prove that I care about them and their mental health, their emotional well-being.
100%. As I talk to organizations, so I have said on my website, here's some resources, but if you need additional support, I'm happy to connect with them or provide additional things for you to have those conversations with your HR department. I'm really passionate about having bereavement leave added. And it's interesting as I talk to some of these organizations and they bring up, what is the value that I'm getting, right? We can't just give another day off to employees. And in my mind, I take it back to not only work product from quality, right? This is how your employee is going to be showing up and here's how they're going to be doing their job. But also from an employee retention standpoint or an employee recruitment, I think by having policies that have pet bereavement leave, you are signaling to your employee that you understand they have a life outside of work and that things outside of work are going to impact their work. And this at least allows you to do it in a way that is structured in your policies, but it's signaling to them that you understand that they're human beings. We're not robots coming into work.
So many of workplace benefits are an acknowledgement of that. Yeah. And it makes you a more competitive employer. Where do you want to work?
Yep. And for me, I mean, my company is very small. So, you know, we have like 30 employees. And so when I talk to these bigger organizations, I talk about the fact if I can do it at my size and we can make it work as a bigger company, I think that there's only upside. There really is only upside.
Yeah. Most bigger companies have more coverage for someone who's going to be out than you, who have probably several departments that are a department of one person.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah. But it matters. It really matters.
Your website has several sections. You've already talked about workplace support, but there's family and friends resources, pet parent support, veterinary clinic support. All of these different areas sort of intersect for the grieving pet parent, whether it's they've lost the pet or it's imminent, that there's end of life decisions being made. Have you talked to any veterinarians who've described how helpful it is to have clients who have that support so that the vet doesn't have that burden? Because the vet has enough of a load, one, caring for your pet and helping you make those decisions, but then they typically have multiple animals that they're having to deal with this.
Yeah. And I think you nailed it when you said they're already overburdened. They have such a big responsibility, veterinarians, and they're caring for so many different types of animals. And it's not like a pediatrician where your patients are going to turn 18 and then they're going to go to a primary care and your primary care gets to see you for so many years. You know, their patients, they are passing 8 to 15 years. They're only living for a shorter amount of time. So they're getting not only all the happy memories with their patients and with you, but they're also seeing all of the really hard times when they're passing. And I think that would be a big weight to carry as a veterinarian, as a vet tech. And so what I created was more around how, when I talk to veterinarians, they express, we care, we are there, our hearts are in it. At the same time, we don't have time to be creating training or resources. And so the things that I created for them is, you know, telephone discussion guides, or here's how you could talk to somebody about what your euthanasia process looks like at your practice. Or, you know, when you have those types of appointments on your calendar, here's the types of things you might want to think about for your front desk or for your vet techs that day. And that way they can, it's not branded, they can just print it out and give it to their employees and they can just ask them to take this into consideration to make it easier for pet parents when you're going through something. I know for me, it was really hard after Kingston passed. I then received the invoice just out of nowhere in my email at like 2 p.m. the next day. And that was hard to just have the email with the invoice. And now this is the last time I'm going to see, you know, his name on an invoice and what it was for. And there's been stories just from others that I've talked to where they've gone into the practice. Our vet came to our home, but they went into the practice and they brought their dog with them. And the front desk was like, "Hi, how are you? Come on in." And they're like, "Are you here for the spa?" And they're like, "No, you know, we're not." "Oh, you must be here for a vet appointment. That's over there." Like, they're not even really thinking about what's on the schedule.
"I'm here for the toughest day of my life."
Exactly. Yes. And it's not, again, like the vet office has so much going on. It is a very easy thing to train your front desk to just say, "Hey, let's look at our appointments for today. And when you see one like that, let's really think about what our front desk looks like, or maybe we have them come in from a different entrance." There's little, easy, free things.
Yeah, we could start at neutral.
Yeah.
And then shift to condolences or enthusiasm
based on
how this person and their pet are responding. Wow. Yes. Our regular veterinarian has a transition room, which they started just a couple years ago, which not only did they not have, I had never seen before.
I've not heard of that. That's beautiful.
And it is just a nicely appointed room with some plants and some dog beds on the floor and blankets and tissues and toys and treats.
Wow.
And I thought, what a great idea. And then when Vinny was ill, and we really haven't talked about this much on the air, it was like flipping a switch. He had gone for a walk, was having a great day. I was out. He'd gone for a walk with my wife, Dawn. I get home. He greeted me, and then I had someplace I needed to go, and he was going to be alone for a couple hours, and my wife was getting ready to leave for work, and then he just started shaking and vomiting. And I won't go to how we figured out we need to go to an emergency hospital, not our regular vet. We contacted our regular vet, and she said, "Don't come here, go there." And that was the last day we had Vinny. and you talk about veterinarians dealing with a new puppy and minor issues, and then you get to end of life, they see that whole, this poor oncologist, this is the only day he ever got to see Vinny. And so his interactions with us are figuring out, how well do I know this couple? How do I explain their options to them? He did an amazing job. And then Mission MedVet, which is an animal hospital in Kansas City that has departments. They have an oncology department. They have an emergency room. They are the place to go. There's a couple in Kansas City that are like that, but they're one of the premier. And it's where we had taken Peaches for her chemo when she had been diagnosed with cancer. But with Vinny, the cancer they found was so advanced that he couldn't even promise Vinny would make it through the night.
Wow.
And they had a room like that. So it goes from me never having heard of such a thing to now the two hospitals where I've spent the most time both have this place. And at Mission MedVet, since they have more emergency encounters than your typical vet clinic, and they're a 24-hour hospital.
Wow.
There was no rush. It was, you wait here, we'll bring Vinny in. And then there's a button on the wall that rings or lights up outside to let them know you're ready to say goodbye. But there is no pressure for my shift ends at 6. Take as much time as you need. And then even when we press the button, it's time. No rush.
It matters. It matters because that day will stay with you the rest of your life.
Yeah. So yeah, he comes in. He's not looking at his watch. Yeah. He comes in and sits down on the floor with us. That would have been unthinkable. So you're nodding your head that's a wonderful way to do it. As many awful ways as that experience could go, that's one of the better ones. But just a few years ago, to have described that to someone, they would have had no way to process that information. It's like, I don't know what you're talking about. A transition, what? A hospital has a dedicated room. I don't understand what you're talking about.
I love it. I hope it catches on in more places. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes it's just sparking the idea to tell them, you know, they're so busy in their day-to-day and caring for all of the families and the pets that they have. That really is, I think, the resource section. I'm going to update it now to add your experience to that, because I really think it's beautiful. And I think, again, these are things that it doesn't take a lot of effort, but can mean the world to us, right? I mean, you will remember that for the rest of your life.
Yeah. So yeah, just a little thing, like, because they're a big enough facility, they can do this. It was a separate exit. My wife and I didn't have to walk through a lobby of all these people sitting there holding their pets, waiting for their appointment.
Yes, it matters. It matters. I didn't know in-home was an option until I called my vet when Kingston was diagnosed with his cancer, and then we had to make arrangements. So I wasn't prepared. I also didn't know what to expect that day, how it was going to go. But I think the more that we all can talk about these experiences, because again, for human beings, you expect, oh, there's probably going to be a visitation, and then there's going to be a funeral. Which one am I going to? Is a funeral for close family, but for our pets, I don't think we talk about it enough. We don't talk about our experiences and what could be possible, and we don't even plan for it when we know it's going to come one day. I feel more prepared now, you know, for Mishka and Edmund and Teddy, of at least, you know, how I'm thinking about it. It will still be hard, but at least I will have learned more hearing your story, hearing of others' story of what could go wrong, but also what the options are, I think is so important because we don't talk about it.
Yeah. My wife and I have become ambassadors for Lap of Love, and I'll link to that in the description. With Peaches, we were able to use Lap of Love. And when I talk to a friend who has an older dog, or they're talking about their pet dog or cat, or even a friend who has a horse, about our experience with Lap of Love, just to let them know, you can make these end-of-life decisions now that are still going to be emotional, but not as emotional. There's a much higher level of rationality to the decision-making process. And then Lap of Love allows you to I've put this on my credit card. You have it on file so that when the veterinarian comes out, she's not saying, oh, I need to run your American Express. That's been taken care of. And you can change your decisions at any time. Or if there's an emergency situation and you don't need their services, then your card doesn't get charged. So there's this practical side of it. But I talk to people about it just to plant the seed so that they remember that this is an option and try to explain to them how non-clinical it is that our veterinarian showed up like she was going to go to Sunday brunch. Not in a disrespectful way that, oh, you've inconvenienced me, but that she's not wearing a lab coat. She's there for you, to support you. And just like at Mission MedVet with Peaches, Lap of Love didn't rush us. They let us take our time. She got to know Peaches. But when I share that with people, some are like, oh, thank you so much. I'm going to write that down. I need to contact them right away. And most people are, well, that's interesting. But then a month later, I get an email. What was that place you were talking about?
It is so, we plan for our own lives. And I think with Kingston, our vet came here. I now am familiar with Lap of Love. I actually got to do an interview with them a couple of months ago. They're just incredible human beings from how they think about planning, the group support that they provide the public, even for free, that you can attend the group sessions. But with our experience with Kingston, they came and not only just the invoice the next day that like sucked all the wind or air out of my body, but that day it felt really comforting that it was his doctor who has seen him his whole life was here for that moment. But what was really hard is after, when you're looking through the book and they're like, do you want a paw print? Do you want a nose print? What urn do you want? How do you want the ashes to come? Those types of decisions after that has happened are really tough. Like to have had that done ahead of time would have been incredible.
Yes. Yeah. Because with Lap of Love, and I'm sure other programs, because if you're someplace where Lap of Love does not have veterinarians, there may be other services, or at least look at Lap of Love's website to know what kinds of decisions you need to make. And then discuss that with your veterinarian. And they may say, that sounds like a great idea. I will do that for you. But with Lap of Love, I filled out a form online, uploaded a picture of Peaches. Then shortly after that, I get a call from them. And it's not a pushy upsell call. It's a, we just want to confirm that we have all the right information and this is the working phone number. And put your mind at ease that if you have any questions or need to follow up with us, we are here for you. And then it was the same thing a few months later when it was obvious this is now the time for Peaches to call and schedule. Because if you don't call them on today's the day, because then you've waited too long. You call them when you can tell there's more bad days than good. And I'm looking at my calendar and the forecast, and it's going to be beautiful Sunday afternoon. Yes. And we can sit on the deck and she can enjoy the sunshine.
Yeah. Our on-call.
So then when you call them and say it's Thursday morning and can you come Sunday, and they look at their schedule. And again, it's, we've got you on file. It's not, do you want an urn? Do you want paw print? What do you want done with the ashes? Do you want a communal cremation, or do you want a private? Or it's just, you already made those decisions. We're just locking you in on our calendar.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I love that we're talking about this now, and I hope anyone who's listening, I mean, really takes it to heart around the benefit of planning ahead. I know it seems dark and gray to be thinking about, I don't want to be planning for that, and I don't want to think about that right now. I just want to enjoy the benefit that will happen when you have it, if the day will come.
That day will be hard no matter what you do. Don't make it harder than it has to be.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's also for me, the pet bereavement part of it too, of even if I'm not talking to organizations themselves, the reason I want to at least bring awareness to it and talk to every, you know, you have a role, just to go back to your company and bring it up, right? And maybe just plant a seed. And if it ends up coming and you get to benefit from it, you know, that's great. Now you have structure in place to be able to have a moment for yourself. before the time is here.
Yeah. Plant that seed, normalize it.
Yeah. Normalize that it's hard, that they are your family. And that, I mean, even just talking about it now, I've never had this conversation, right, with other people until this year.
And then you realize how important it is and how you wish someone had had it with you.
Yes.
And you could say, well, that stinks that I didn't have that conversation. But instead, you recognized, here's a pain point that I can help people with. And again, petsourfamily.info is linked in the description. It's not only a link to or an opportunity for people to pre-order the book, but also just the resources that are there for you. So access the resources, pre-order the book. You probably know someone who should pre-order this book. Maybe you could do that for them and get multiple copies. Maybe something that give a handful of them to your vet to have in their waiting room, and one for your vet to take home and give to your employer. I'm trying to do the math here. I think everyone needs to order at least 5 of these. You need one for yourself, one for your vet to have in their lobby, one for your boss, and one for a friend. So we're up to at least 5.
Yes.
Start there, and then you can always get more.
True. Yes. Yeah.
But start with that. And links to the different episodes that I've talked about. I'll link to Lap of Love. I'll link to the Pet Nation interview and also the wonderful book, which I think you would enjoy this very much. P.S. I Love You More Than Tuna. Mm-hmm. We had that author on, and I think that would be a wonderful companion piece for your book because it's a very quick read. It's something that you need in the moment. And your book is the sort of big picture. Here are the boxes you need to check, the things you need to do for your own emotional well-being, for your sanity, for others, helping them get the bereavement time that hopefully their employers will also recognize is so valuable. People should bundle these books. Get Erica Sinner's book and then also get P.S. I Love You More Than Tuna. And you'll be grateful to me that I recommended them. Get both. We keep talking about what we can do to take care of ourselves because there is that loneliness. And we really haven't talked about what if you're on the other side of this? What if you are the friend or relative of someone who's lost a pet? What are those rituals? What are those expectations? What can you do?
Yeah. In the back part of the book, I have a section for family and friends of how do we show support? How do we show up for others that we care about? And it's on the website as well under the family and friends section. And there's really 3 different resources. One is around just how to show up, right? How are they feeling? What are they going through? Why is this so hard? If you personally do not understand and you want to understand. And then the other 2 are, one, there's non-gift ways to support someone. And there's even examples of text messages that meant a lot to me when I received them, where it's not so much that you're asking for somebody to reply back, but even ideas around, hey, I just want you to know I'm thinking about you, or hey, I want you to know I know you're going through a really hard time. I'm here for you.
There's no emoji for that.
Yeah, yes. And some of the text messages I received, I felt a little, to have to respond back is also exhausting for someone who is going through grief. And so I just have some prompts there, and they don't cost anything to just reach out. And then I also have gift ideas with links to everything of possible gifts that you could send. And, you know, we received garden stones, we received picture frames, really beautiful things. And then there was also a pillow replica of Kingston. And there was, in opening that, it was, for me, it was really hard to have and to see, were, you know, blankets with pictures of him everywhere. I couldn't have them out right away. I can now, but it was hard at the beginning. And so it just helps you think about what is it that you're wanting to send and what is the timing that you're sending it. And when you do send something, like, there's no need to text them and be like, did you get my gift? Or the tracking says this, or whatever it is. I think it's already hard to get out of bed. So it's just little tips and tricks for how to really show up in love on someone going through it.
That's so valuable because you will have the thought, I need to do something. What should I do? It's too soon, which morphs into, well, now it's too late.
Yeah.
So yes. Yeah, the guidelines on appropriateness and wording and timing. You've already thought that through. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, it's things to consider and ideas that really would mean a lot to anyone.
I think for a lot of people, just using that resource might just inspire them to, okay, I know how to word this for my friend. It's like, yes. Gives them a starting point and go from there, or at the very least, just take what Erica's giving you and run with it.
Yeah.
Erica, thank you for what you're doing, and thank you for being on Dog Words.
Thank you for having me and giving the opportunity to have this conversation and share it with others. This was wonderful to talk about. Even in the emotional parts, I think it feels really nice to honor Peaches and Vinny and my Kingston. I think it's important.
I'm Phil Hatterman, and you've been listening to Dog Words, presented by Rosie Fund. Thank you to author Claire Skinner for joining us today. A link to petsourfamily.info is linked in the description for you to pre-order Erica's book and to access the wonderful resources she's compiled on her website. There are also links to archived editions of the episodes of Dog Words that we referenced in this episode, as well as more information on the Pooch Playoffs and the fundraiser for Rosie Fund dog, Philip. A big thank you to alternative string duo The Wires, featuring cellist Sasha Groshong and violinist Laurel Morgan Parks, for playing the wonderful music you've heard on today's and previous episodes of Dog Words. Supporting The Wires supports our mission. Learn more about The Wires, including their concert schedule, at thewires.info, and download their music on iTunes. Check out fiddlelife.com and learn to play fiddle and cello fiddle online from Laurel and Sasha, even if you've never played before. Go to rosiefund.org to shop and get links to our social media. As always, please download, follow, rate, and share Dog Words. This helps us with sponsorships, then Rosie Fund can help more dogs. Send us your comments, questions, and suggestions via the contact form at rosiefund.org, and let us know if you would like to be a sponsor or a guest of the Dog Words podcast. Thank you for listening to Dog Words, and remember, we save each other.